Bridget did not exist before this episode. What they're about to describe is happening across Southeast as you listen. This is their story. In Worthing West, healthcare training that should connect qualified applicants to hospital wards sits unfunded, while Treasury spending limits treat nurse education as a cost rather than the pathway that puts skilled hands where patients need them most.
I've always known I wanted to be a nurse. Growing up in Worthing, watching my grandmother navigate dementia while my mum juggled her teaching and my dad worked for the council, I saw how much difference the right care could make. When I was helping look after Gran, the nurses who came to the house weren't just doing a job. They were giving her dignity. I wanted to be part of that. After my A-levels at Worthing College, I started as a healthcare assistant at Worthing Hospital. 3 years on the wards taught me that I had the temperament for nursing, and the patients seemed to respond well to me. The registered nurses I worked alongside encouraged me to apply for training. They said the NHS needed people like me, people who understood what the work really meant. In 2019, I applied to the University of Brighton's nursing program. I was accepted. I had the grades, I had the experience, I had the motivation. Everything seemed to be falling into place. Then Health Education England contacted me. My training place existed, but the funding had been withdrawn due to Treasury spending constraints. They told me to reapply the following year when budgets might be restored. I accepted this. It sounded reasonable. Budgets get stretched, priorities have to be set. I spent 2020 working extra shifts as a healthcare assistant, saving money and reapplying for the nursing course. When the acceptance letter came again, I felt that familiar surge of excitement. Then came the second rejection from Health Education England. "There is no funding available," they told me. The same phrase, the same apologetic tone. I tried a different approach in 2021. I contacted NHS England directly, thinking maybe the problem was bureaucratic rather than financial. The response was more detailed, but the conclusion was the same. Workforce planning budgets had been capped, and training commissioning was frozen. They explained that they had to work within the allocation set by the Treasury. It all sounded very official, very final. That's when I started asking different questions. I joined a healthcare workers support group, where I met Key Run, another healthcare assistant who'd been trying to get onto a nursing course. She told me similar stories from across the Southeast. Training places sitting unfunded, qualified applicants being turned away. Hospitals complaining they couldn't recruit nurses. None of it seemed to fit together. One afternoon I was walking past the University of Brighton's health campus when I saw something that stopped me cold. Lecture halls that should have been full of nursing students were empty. Simulation labs with expensive medical equipment were dark during what should have been peak teaching hours. I asked the security guard what was going on. He told me they had dozens of unfilled nursing training places that year because Health Education England had refused to fund them, despite having qualified applicants. I stood there looking at those empty rooms, and something clicked. The people existed. I was one of them. Key Run was another. There were dozens more I'd met through the support group. The university existed, with its lecturers and its equipment and its accreditation. The hospital wards existed, desperately short-staffed and crying out for qualified nurses. The only thing missing was the decision to connect them. When Health Education England said there is no funding, what exactly did they mean? The UK government issues the pound. It doesn't need to find pounds before it spends them. What it needs are real resources: lecturers, classrooms, clinical placements, students ready to learn. All of those resources were right there, sitting idle. I started to understand that what I'd experienced wasn't a shortage. It was a choice. The Treasury had decided that training more nurses was too expensive. But expensive in what sense? Not in pounds, which the government creates. Expensive in the sense that it would mean acknowledging that public investment is how you build public capacity. Expensive in the sense that it would mean admitting the household budget analogy is wrong. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But I could see with my own eyes that the real constraints weren't financial. The lecturers were available. The facilities were available. The clinical placements were desperate for students. The only constraint was the political decision to treat public investment as a burden rather than as the mechanism that turns potential into practice. Where I am now, I'm still a healthcare assistant. I'm still saving money, still hoping that one day the funding will be restored. But I don't accept the excuse anymore. When someone tells me there is no money, for nurse training while empty lecture halls gather dust. I hear it differently. I hear a political choice dressed up as an accounting problem. I used to think the government budget worked like a household budget, that you had to save before you could spend, that resources were naturally scarce. I see now that the UK government's constraint is not pounds, but real things. People, skills, materials, time. In healthcare, those real resources exist. The unemployed healthcare assistants who want to become nurses exist. The universities with nursing programs exist. The hospitals that need more qualified staff exist. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. The government that issues the currency chose not to spend it into the training that would connect willing people to necessary work. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. What happened to me is happening in every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. It's the story of every qualified applicant told to wait for budgets that never come. Every training centre sitting empty because funding was withdrawn. Every public service cut back to the bone, while the resources to restore it sit unused. The money was never the problem. The problem was always the refusal to use it.
What Bridget experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique works by citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies once found scientists willing to question the smoking cancer link, or how pharmaceutical firms funded research that downplayed side effects. The methodology was the same. Find credentialed voices who support your preferred conclusion, then present their authority as proof. In Bridget's case, when she questioned why training places sat unfunded while qualified nurses were desperately needed, she was told that economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is divided on this question. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, lecturers, facilities, clinical placements, students ready to learn. In Worthing West, all of these existed simultaneously, while Health Education England claimed there was no money to connect them. The empty lecture halls and idle simulation equipment proved that the constraint was never financial. It was ideological. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Worthing West ranks 336 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 7. The constituency has 2,680 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £25.4 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.